and welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about transportation in the city of Oaks. I'm Jennifer. Today on our show, we've got guest host Imran Akhil. Listeners may remember him from our 2017 episode, that was number 15, in which we talked about traffic. Today, he joins me to talk about growth and transportation and transit planning. Welcome back, Imran.
Thanks, Jennifer.
So growth and transportation, well, really growth, it's like the most significant issue facing Raleigh and the Triangle as a whole. And there's just a whole lot going on in a general sense with this. So Imran, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, it's a really exciting time right now in the Triangle. You've heard the news about potential big companies coming here, the Amazons and Apples of the world, and the market is really hot. There's development happening all over the place. There are new projects popping up. It seems like in every corner of the Triangle, downtown Raleigh, downtown Durham, all along all the highways, 40 US 1, inside the Beltline, outside the Beltline, and so that growth, it begs the question of what is the vision for the region and what is the framework for that vision? I think you and I probably both agree that transit is probably a really good skeleton when you're planning out that growth, especially for the 20 to 50 year plan. I imagine we want to see more transit-oriented development and less suburban office, because there's really nowhere else to put suburban office. We're sort of filling up in every corner with parking lots. But yeah, it's an interesting time, and I think the questions that need to be asked regarding transit really need to be asked today and not tomorrow, because we don't want to wait until an Amazon or an Apple get here to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, and I don't know if I think a lot of other people I've talked to lately have felt like there's not a lot of this happening. I mean, yes, we're talking about our transit plan and the Wake County Transit plan's underway, but are we really digging into this long term? Like, are we making the right decisions that are going to put us on a path to become a better city? And I think a lot of us would agree that we don't want to end up like Atlanta. I use that example all the time, and I hear other people use it too. So how do we get to the place where we have a fantastic community that people want to be part of, and where you don't have to sit in traffic for hours and hours just to get where you're going?
Yeah, that's the challenge. And I think the decision-making process, I think, is the real core of this question. How do we decide when and where to invest in transit? I have been a native resident of all cities in the Triangle. I've lived in Chapel Hill, Durham, and Raleigh. And it seems like all of the cities are asking themselves that same question. Chapel Hill and Durham, for example, made that decision to invest in a transit system between the two cities. Raleigh tried to ask itself that question and make that decision some years ago, and it failed. And now it's going back through that process, and it looks like it's moving in the right direction with the bus rapid transit plan. But you still see the headlines, in terms of transit at least, really focusing on the next stage of 540. When are we going to expand the highway? When are we going to widen 40? When are we going to widen the northern side of 540? When are we going to build a wider 85? And so that's really, I think, raising this question of why are we relentlessly chasing this highway building effort when transit takes forever to build out and to invest in? And so I think that's really the interesting question I want to discuss today, is what is the decision-making process? Why do the leaders immediately have this knee-jerk reaction for widening highways? You know, I was reading the stats on 540. That stretch of 540, that's a toll road from approximately 40 down to Holly Springs, cost us about $1 billion to build. And I found some fascinating data from the American Public Transit Association from a 2014 economic impact study that shows that for every $1 billion that's invested in transit, a place can expect to see $3.7 billion of additional GDP. And that same study said that that translates to about 50,731 jobs. Now imagine Amazon is planning on bringing 50,000 jobs to wherever it goes. That's the $1 billion in transit investment could have created 50,000 new jobs. The Federal Reserve also published some research that shows that in Portland, Oregon, for example, for every 100 feet closer that a property is to a transit station, it's $75 more valuable. And in New York, for every 100 feet closer that a property is to a transit station, it's $2,300 more valuable. So we're talking about significant value. We're talking about real economic data to sort of prove the value that transit creates for a place. And yet we don't see that level of investment. We don't see the decisions moving in that direction. And I think we had talked offline once about this sort of interesting heuristic that comes up in people's minds. The way I like to frame it is the way Cal Newport said it in his book Deep Work. There are two types of analytical mechanisms used in investing in one tool versus another. The first mechanism, as he called it, is the any benefit mechanism. When a society or a group of people see any potential benefit in investing in a tool, they will invest in it, and in some cases they'll invest too much in it. And what Cal Newport says is there's another mechanism that we should be thinking about, and it's the craftsman mechanism. It's very comprehensive. It thinks about the short-term and long-term benefits and costs of a tool. And I think that's sort of the mechanism that we start to see in some of our transit projects and some of our regional development projects. But again, we see these road-building projects pop up to the surface and happen much more quickly.
Right. Back to some of your points. I mean, we're spending all this money, and the whole concept is to, quote-unquote, ease congestion in our city. But it's not going to ease congestion. There's, you know, Wake County keeps growing. We've heard those stats. We could talk about those all day long. We're not going to change that. We need to be smarter about our growth, and that's a whole other topic, is land use. But it is a knee-jerk reaction. We are just inherently going back to the old playbook of, oh, well, let's widen the road, as if that's going to fix the problem. And it just really isn't. Now, I'm not saying transit fixes everything. We've talked about those studies too, but what I am happy to see is that some residents are pushing back a little bit on some of this road widening. You see, I just feel like there's a lot of headlines on this lately in the news. It's constantly like, oh, we're going to widen this road. I mean, the NCDOT is looking at Six Forks, and that got some pushback. And now they're talking about Falls of Neuse by the Beltline, the Diverging Diamond project that you guys have probably heard about. And people are just upset. They're like, wait, why are we thinking cars? This is not the solution. So I feel hope about that. But at the same time, every time there's new development or project, the first thing neighbors are doing is complaining that there's going to be more traffic. And I don't know, it's just, I guess, the human instinct. So I'm not sure how we sort of remap our hardwiring in our heads to say, oh, we're not going to just have this knee-jerk reaction like you're talking about.
Yeah, the remapping is really important. There's a paper published by Italian researchers in transport policy where they show that people have this irrational bias toward automobiles. They call it the car effect. That bias is the result of heuristics which lead to these robust deviations from rational behavior. And rewiring that is extremely difficult. It requires creating an alternative that is reliable, that is frequent, that is clean and safe, that is viewed as a value add and not just a tool for welfare. And we should revisit the welfare point in a minute, but I think that rewiring takes some time. It's not going to happen overnight, but it takes time, and it certainly takes investment and leadership by our cities and our state to really show our communities just what transit can do for them. I think, you know, for example, building the bus rapid transit is wonderful for Raleigh, but then how does that tie into the broader region? How does that tie into, say, you know, the suburban areas around it, Cary and Apex and North Raleigh and so on? Those are the places where the vast majority of people are living and commuting from, and I think we want to make sure that all of those people, all the people who are driving their cars from one point to another in the region, understand that the value in regional transit is really there, and it's significant, and it can change your life.
Well, and with the Wake County Transit Plan, right now the survey is still online. Everyone should go take it. It explains where they are expanding the bus routes, and the BRT, one of them, is going to hopefully go out to Cary, so that's good. But along the lines of the heavy car bias, what really fascinates me about this is how deeply embedded it is. Just the language that the NCDOT and other organizations use, and I'm not trying to pick on them or anything, it's based on the assumption that a wider road for cars is an improvement. We call it an improvement when we widen a road. And I'm going to link to a post from the Streets blog in the show notes that talked about a situation in Asheville where it was the city against the DOT. They were pushing for wider roads and leaving bicyclists to fend for themselves and just kind of like shoving them in the curb. They didn't even get their own lane or any, you know, it was just, but it was one of those roads where you really needed space for bicyclists. What, you know, they ask themselves, what are we really gaining here? Jarrett Walker has also talked about this. He's a famous person in the transit planning space. And he talked about how this car bias has evolved historically. If you think about the history of transit planning, a lot of what we figured out how to do was in the 50s and 60s. And of course, that was the golden age of the automobile. And we haven't updated those plans since then. Even the word traffic, it implies car traffic. But that could be somebody walking or riding a bike or even somebody on a moped. So I'm not sure really what the answer is, how we get away from this bias toward cars, because I wonder if part of what put us into this mess is marketing. I mean, if you think about the way the automobile has been marketed to Americans, and I work in marketing, so I'm kind of laughing.
It's the tool that gives you access to
the
world.
It's freedom, right? Yeah, it's freedom. But the true freedom is being able to walk. And then, like, back to your point about the welfare, which we can come back to, I think the way to get away from that might be marketing.
Well, I think I want to talk about Jarrett Walker for a second, because I got a shout out to him. He got into a really interesting Twitter exchange recently with Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, Tesla is this fascinating company. They're really pushing the car industry toward some new paradigms of all electric, self-driving, high performance. And it's an interesting change in the industry. But Jarrett Walker said, that doesn't solve the core problem that cars present. You know, 1,000 self-driving cars might incrementally improve traffic, might incrementally improve roadway infrastructure, but they still require road infrastructure. They still require a significant amount of space dedicated to one person. It doesn't solve the volumetric issue and the value issue that transit really provides for. So I really want to just emphasize that it's important to remember that self-driving cars and all electric cars and hybrid cars are all great, and it's moving in the right direction, but the volumetric issues that are created by traffic and by cars are not going to be solved by those solutions. And going to your marketing point, you're absolutely right. Cars have been marketed as the tool for freedom, as the tool for growth and privilege in our society. I remember watching a documentary about the founders of the United States and the people who built our country. I think it was a History Channel documentary, and they talked about how the car companies were a part of the foundation and construction of this country, because cars gave people a way to explore, you know, the Wild West and explore uncharted territory, and that's sort of in the DNA of Americans. And I think all of that is really actually the result of marketing. I don't know that there's any truth to that.
Yeah, we should look into that. I mean, it's the whole, like, Route 66, go on your big adventure thing, right? Like, people just are in love with this concept, but I honestly find that car inhibits me more than it helps. I mean, sure, I can get A to B a lot faster, but, God, then you got to think about parking and just dealing with traffic, which I just don't like driving, so let's just be honest.
Right, but I mean, I think you're right. I think we have this romantic notion, or we've been sold a romantic notion of what car ownership is all about. It's about the freedom, but the reality is, when you're in a car, you do have to look for a parking spot, and somebody has to pay for that parking spot, and then you have to build the sewer infrastructure for that parking spot, and somebody's paying for that, and you have to build all the roads and all the curbs and all the miles and miles of sidewalk.
Spend $1 billion on it.
Well, right, exactly. And then I think what ends up happening is, it's that any benefit mechanism. We see the one benefit of cars, and so the marketing experts have said, use that benefit. That benefit will transform your life. And the reality is that one benefit comes with significant trade-offs. And we don't talk about that as much as a society. Our political leaders, I think, probably don't talk about that as much, because it's not as exciting. It's not compelling to say cars cost a lot of money, and cars are very difficult, and cars create a lot of ecological, environmental, social problems.
Right, but the opposite is true. It's so easy for people to point to transit and say, oh, God, what a pain. You know, I had to walk to the bus stop. I had to wait 10 minutes for it to show up, and then it took me longer to get there. So back to that point, In our area, Raleigh especially, it is looked as a welfare program, but is that because we're not investing the same dollars in this system as we are in cars? We invest so much money into our car system, if you just stop and think about it for 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Vox had this 2015 report about why we have these transit problems or traffic problems, and the core of the article was that it's not suburban sprawl alone that's the problem. You know, it's easy to look at the suburbs and say, oh, the single family housing, the people who live out in the Carys and Apexes and Morrisvilles of the world are the driver of the problem, no pun intended. But the reality is that countries around the world, especially right after World War II, they realized that they had to integrate transit across their societies, not just in their urban cores, but even reaching out to the suburban areas. So, you know, especially in Europe, you'll see these transit systems, the commuter rails, et cetera, reaching out way beyond the core of the city. And at the same time, the United States was willfully destroying its transit systems. I mean, remember, there was a period of time where we were tearing out streetcar lines, where we were removing rail connections.
Happened here in Raleigh.
Absolutely. I mean, you still see the skeletons of those systems in some of our streets. It's really sad. And we removed all those things, and we said, let's build highways instead. Let's go along this urban renewal ideology that we were seeing in New York under Robert Moses and others, and let's follow suit and build these big highways. And so we built the highways, we cut back on our transit infrastructure, and ever since then, there's just been this vicious downward cycle that transit has experienced. I think in that same Vox article, one of the researchers noted that because transit is perceived as a welfare program for those people who can't afford to drive, we run it like a welfare program. We keep fares artificially low. We keep maintenance down to an absolute minimum. We keep frequency and convenience down to a minimum, and therefore we keep it sort of subdued for just those who absolutely need it and have no other choice. But if we were to make it better, if we were to invest in it, if we were to charge people more money to ride the train or to ride the transit system, and in return they got a higher frequency, safer, cleaner system, they would potentially give up their cars. And I'd say in the triangle, as this area continues to grow and as we attract Apples and Amazons, that is going to happen even more. People are going to say, you know what, I don't want to be stuck on 40 or US 1 for 45 minutes to an hour when I can just hop on a train or a bus and be at my destination in 30 minutes.
Right. Along with that, though, I feel like we need to talk about disincentivizing driving in some ways. Why are we making it so easy all the time? And this is probably its own episode unto itself, and it kind of relates to some of the downtown parking problems that we've talked about recently on the show. If you just keep making it easier and easier for people to drive and park, they're just going to keep doing so, except when the gas prices are exorbitant, which history has shown that's when people ride transit more often, when it actually hits them in the wallet. But I do agree, if, you know, we should make it easier. On the other hand, how far should the law go to, like, reshape people's lifestyles? I mean, is this something that transit planners need to be actively doing here? The New York Times did this article recently about California, and of course, they have these issues on just the most massive scale. And there's one plan out there to get rid of car traffic altogether in some areas. Part of that is an ecological concern. Federal requirements are, of course, requiring cars to be more fuel efficient, but those gains are offset because Americans just keep driving more and more. So really, that's not helping. And we can have electric vehicles, to your point earlier, and all these solar panels, but we're not going to get there if we just keep making it easier to drive. Paris has cut down on car traffic, especially within the city's core. And you know what's great about that is it creates these awesome spaces. People are out on foot, on bicycle, families are walking. It's just back to the whole point of car does not equal freedom. There's these things people are not thinking about, these benefits that people don't think about. The real question is how far can we go to, like, is it just going to take a huge marketing push on top of economic change and gas prices and the pain of parking and driving all combined? Is that how we're going to, like, fix the triangle?
Well, there's a tipping point, I think, in all innovation where you see these changes occur naturally, regardless of whether or not politicians step up and create the laws or the incentives or disincentives that are necessary. And I think we're seeing that in the triangle. I think we're seeing this sort of push to create more urban places. The sort of traditional suburban development model is actually in decline. You don't see RTP growing like crazy. You actually see downtown Raleigh and downtown Durham and even the smaller cities are all trying to create more urban cores. Out in Apex, their downtown is really vibrant. And I read an article recently that the town of Pittsboro, which is going to be going through some significant growth with the Chatham Park development, is looking at which small town cores they want to model their town center after, because they realize that the vibrant core of Pittsboro will be important to, you know, the next generation of residents in that town. So, you know, I think you're seeing it happen naturally. You're seeing people step up to the plate and ask those questions and move in that direction. I think the hope is that our political leaders and our development partners and all the other stakeholders involved in the transit system are going to step up to the plate sooner rather than later and take leadership roles, because I think if we do this well and if we do it early, then we will reap the benefits on the back end, and we will see that the development in 10, 20, 30, 50 years will be that much better. You know, our children and grandchildren will enjoy robust transit options by then, hopefully, and they'll have a much better quality of life.
Well, that's the hope. I think some would probably argue with you that we should have done this 10, 20 years ago, yeah. And I probably would include myself in that. I do worry, because I feel like there is a lot of pushback from political leadership right now, and things aren't necessarily headed in the right direction. But, you know, what can we do? I mean, host a transit podcast and hope somebody actually listens to it and cares.
Absolutely. I think there are 100 ways to tackle this, and, you know, there are people out there really working in every corner of this effort, from the sort of public outreach through podcasts like this, but also sort of social media. I think we're seeing an emergence of transit awareness. I saw on Facebook, I think it was, that the Wake Up Wake County group has been actively broadcasting their message and their support for transit. And so I think you're seeing this happen in all realms out there today. And so I think the future is bright. I'm optimistic.
All right. Well, I'll take it. And since the listeners of this podcast are probably interested in transit, make sure you take the bus and BRT survey. It's still available. They do want your input, and it's really important to do that. I think it disappears soon, so I don't have the date on that, but really important. Any other thoughts to share?
No, I think this is an exciting time. I think what we will learn very soon here in the Triangle is, are we in the right place now in 2018 to attract the companies like Apple and Amazon that we would like to see coming here over the next few years and certainly over the next decades? And if we aren't there, if we lose those opportunities, hopefully it'll be a learning lesson for us to act more and get more, you know, sort of involved in the efforts and you know, to make a push towards a more transit-oriented life here.
Yeah, I hope that's true, and definitely people I've talked to seem to be interested in the transit. I don't know how many are interested in Amazon, to be honest with you. but along with that is the concern that we can't handle it. You know, the transit can't handle it. But not to get off topic. I think that's it for today. I really appreciate Imran you coming in and having
Thank
this
you.
Discussion. This has been really interesting. It's a tough topic to kind of get your arms around, but hopefully listeners out there, if you have your thoughts, please share them with us. You can email us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and we're Inbound Raleigh. So thanks again, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks.